I was gonna try to do some kind of like vaguely Phantom of the Opera E type opening, but I'm not clever enough with the musical improv like these two, so fuck it. Welcome to A Star to Steer Her By. I'm Chris, and joining me today are
Ames,
Caitlin,
and Jake.
This week for episode 345,
Woo.
We will be looking at Exile and The Shipment. First up in The Exile, the writers sat down and apparently binged every version of Beauty and the Beast and a couple of Phantoms of the Opera. Because a creepy psychic caco demon reaches out to Hoshi to be like, I can hear your special brain. Come to my planet and I can give you information on the Zindi. And Archer's like, this is weird. And she's like, I mean, it's worth a punt. You've gone based on stupider things. He goes, okay. So they go and he's like, I'm a crazy psychic. And if I touch things, I can psychic them. But I want Hoshi to stay with me. And for like the first time, I think whole series, Archer's like, no, that seems sketch and bad. And Hoshi has to go, I insist, Captain. And he's like, okay. And it's like, wow, what rare win for Archer.
Fucking disagree, but we'll get to it.
Well,
fuck
I mean,
Archer.
Not the fact that he let her, but the fact that he at first was like, this is bad. Like, that moment. Again, he then immediately fucks up.
Yeah, but then he almost orders her to stay, remember?
So yeah, she stays with this creepy guy. Who knows shitloads about her, he's been reading her mind for ages, and he's all like, you know, hey, come chill with me in my weird castle.
I'm gonna castle was great.
Creepy. Please don't go into the West Wing, because that's where the graves of all my dead wives are.
Well, Bluebeard, calm down.
And yeah, so, you know, he's a very long-lived fellow. He lives alone in isolation because super psychics, like, are born one in a whatever in his species. They're super rare, and his species are understandably freaked out by super psychics. So they're forced to just live on their own, and they're apparently incredibly long-lived. He's already, like, 400 or something. He has had and lost many, many companions who he has likely tricked into staying with him.
You're just describing Doctor Who.
He at least takes them places. But yes.
Does he cook for them, though? This guy cooks for them.
He made nice pizza.
He brings them into danger situations and occasionally leaves them in alternate universes.
I prefer this guy.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay then, or whatever the fuck.
God, of course, trying to remember if any of the doctors have ever cooked.
No, they have not. I don't think they have.
What else?
Tom Baker liked a jelly baby.
Yeah. So
David Tennant liked tea.
True. Meanwhile, you know, the Enterprise. Fuck, what did they do something during? Is this the Sphere one? Yeah, it is.
Yes.
It is. So T'Pol has worked out that there's like almost an alignment between the weird fields given off by that sphere they encountered a while back, but maybe if there's another one that would help them, it would create anomalies kind of where they're expecting. So they go, they find it, there's some fake tension when a shuttle pod starts to float away. That ends with T'Pol realizing, oh wait, there's probably something like 50 of these fucking things. And Archer's like, did someone purposely create the Expanse? Meanwhile, back on Phantom of the Beauty
castle.
In the Beast Castle world, Archer is there and he's like, hey, Hosh, so yeah, he gave us the info, but you need to stay
hey,
here. So stay here and we'll be back, we promise. No, I'm not winking. And she's like, you're Tarquin, which I didn't mention earlier is the name of the creepy guy. And he's like, I'm using my mind powers to keep your ship broken in air and they'll die. And she's like, fucking fuck you, dude. And he's like, fine, leave. But I'm not giving you information. Then, like, a day later, like, never mind, change my mind, here's information. And they are given coordinates to a thing. Ooh, thing.
Ooh, we'll have to check out where the coordinates lead, but first, this episode. Directed by Roxanne Dawson, by the way.
Yes.
Who? That's, hold on.
Tor.
Yeah.
Torbjorn.
Torbjorn.
Overwatch.
Yeah, she's got a lot of range.
So much.
That'd be amazing, actually.
Yeah.
Not the best Phantom of the Opera I ever saw, but not the worst.
Yeah, no, it is very much like, again, Phantom of the Opera and Beauty and the Beast, just like...
Well, and especially at the end, like, it goes very, like, the book, where, because in the Phantom of the Opera, the book, he's like, if you don't marry me, I'm going to blow up the opera house and kill everybody.
Oh, Jesus.
Yep. And this is sort
of... It's so romantic.
It is, yeah. I'm like, ugh, why doesn't anyone love me like that?
I mean, I'll murder Jake or whatever if you don't comply with my demands.
Don't kill Jake.
Jake will overpower you, Chris.
Oh, I mean, obviously. I didn't say I was going to take him one-on-one. I'm going to do something subversive and sneaky.
Please don't hurt Jake.
Yeah.
Right, I'll kill this Murph.
Oh my god, not Murph. This Murph, you monster. What's the word?
Plush. I couldn't hurt plush Murph.
Yeah, he's a plush. And I don't
know. They're in limited supply.
I fucking love plush Murph. I never. Plush Murph.
Perf?
Words.
Push Murph, Fursh. But yeah, as a recreation of the Phantom of the Opera, it's not awful. I give it 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I found Tarquin like interesting enough in terms of his portrayal as someone who just lives in a really fucking awesome castle planet. Yeah.
That's the thing, that I felt had wicked TOS vibes.
Oh yeah, like, a little Choir of Gothos.
Gothos, yeah, I was just gonna say.
Even just like, even the cage where they went down to this planet that just had a castle.
I mean, for all we know, Tarquin is
the Squire
of Trelane. Like, his parents who left him on that planet, like, you know, maybe they're the parents that show up and yell at him.
Yeah, in 100 years when he's done the same thing with Kirk.
Yeah.
Just stay with me, I'm so lonely.
Yeah, it does have a lot of, he's even got little, like, tools like
his enhancer egg. I forgot to mention that he needs an egg to reach out as far as he does with his powers.
Trelane has a mirror.
Yeah,
Beast from Beauty and the Beast has a mirror.
Yeah, and then but even you know again sort of the TOS vibes at the end, the like godlike being shutting down the ship from the planet's surface.
Yeah, I didn't realize his powers were able to do that. I thought he could just read Hoshi's mind, which is a little strange considering like Hoshi's mind is supposed to be like some kind of prodigal mind instead of T'Pol, who actually has telepathic Vulcan powers.
Yeah, but he knew she was too smart. You know, part of the Phantom of the Opera is picking the stupid girl who will believe that you're an angel, dead.
Yeah,
sent,
and also,
you know?
Like, for all we know, exactly, like, for all we know, he could read everybody's mind and do all kinds of crazy shit.
But Hoshi seems the most easy to manipulate.
Easy to manipulate, maybe. I don't know, maybe he's...
Well, and if she's actually...
more attracted to her, I don't know.
Well, and if she's actually, like, as secretly lonely as he suggests she is, you feel like she would be more open and sympathetic to a really lonely dude in a cool castle.
Yeah, I never really got from the show that Hoshi was as lonely as they're saying
she is. That Mayweather was a big prankster.
But here we are. She's lonely, he's a prankster.
You'd think together they could find love.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my favorite thing was she figures out that it's not actually Archer. It's a hallucinogenic projection that Tarquin is doing at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's like, oh, you wouldn't miss Travis. And she's like, of course I wouldn't miss Travis. Wait a minute.
Who's Travis?
I thought that's what it was going to be. It's like, you never call him Travis. He's being Mayweather.
Yeah,
I think he does call him Travis.
I was just thinking of Travis. Yeah, wait a minute.
Hold on.
No one's friends with Travis.
No, I was just thinking, what was that guy's name? All right, Travis. Hey.
That's how he slips up. She's like, yeah, I guess I want to say goodbye to my friends. Like, his name's Travis. Jesus Christ, Hoshi. I mean, fuck. Or she's not even thinking that at all. It's like, you know, you'll see Garfield again soon. What? I was just thinking of the Sunday funnies. What the fuck?
I think it would have been very funny if the line had been, how did you know I was trying to remember Travis's name?
And his classic japes.
So was it the whole writing staff and audience. That guy, what's his name again?
Dominic Keating.
Yeah, that was one other thing that I did like, and maybe this is a little bit, you know, good job, Roxanne. When Hoshi is kind of first hallucinating a whole bunch of things because Tarquin is trying to talk with her and showing her face on multiple screens and then going into like this kind of netherworld area with the human shape that he likes. I thought a lot of like the disorientation of that scene with, you know, having the camera like focus on Hoshi's face while the scene moves around her. Like that was all really cool.
Yeah.
I liked that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. We're already done with
this episode. I thought this was fine.
It's on the Enterprise scale. It's a fine episode.
Yeah.
I mean, even in some other series, it probably would be fine. Again, it would be nice if maybe this stuff about Hoshi had been sort of shown at all in the last couple of years and not just info dumped to us by the Kako Demon.
But like you said, like, we almost never see much of Hoshi.
Yeah that's
the
problem.
We only see our Mayweather less than we see Hoshi.
What are you calling him? A Kako Demon?
Yeah,
one of the enemies.
Doom monster. It's the one with, like,
the big red head.
Yeah.
The big red floating head that shoots fireballs.
And has, like, eyes on little spikes and stuff. And
it's cute.
Yeah. In one,
sounds adorable.
One has a cameo in Futurama.
Yeah, I thought this episode was great. Perfect. 10 out of 14.
No, they don't have eyes on spikes.
Is that the Enterprise scale? And that's how the Enterprise scale works? That is not what
it looks like. I want to be more positive, so I'm going to give every episode a 10 rating going forward.
Okay. So they're all 10.
But the scale is going to change.
You know what it is? It's like how Warp was different in TOS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, back in TOS days, they hit like Warp 13 at some point. It was no big deal. And the fanon is that at some point they just adjusted the scale. And that's what it is. This was a 10 out of 10. It's a TNG 2 out of 10. It's not that bad, but it's... No, this one's actually... It's
fine.
It just doesn't present anything. Again, it's a Phantom of the Opera, Beauty and the Beast pastiche kind of thing. We get... Again, it would be more effective if the stuff about Hoshi was something we were already kind of aware of.
Yeah, because then it could kind of build and they could have kind of almost a relationship that's
you could almost
toxic
see it.
And strange. Because also, like, you can understand this guy's plight. Like, he wasn't killing those people that we found in the graves that Hoshi immediately realized were graves and not, like, you know, dedication plaques or something.
Mm.
They were staying with him and dying of old age.
Yeah. Now, admittedly, we don't know if they stayed knowingly. Like, they may have similarly been bamboozled by... But not figured it out like she did.
Yeah. But the thought of him, you know, being exiled to this planet because his mental powers are too great for his species, you know, that's a sympathetic trait. I almost thought for a second, like, Enterprise, why don't you take him with you? His ability to touch things and tell you about them, it could be useful.
Yeah, really. Now, from now on, when Archer's like, you saw a Zindi, tell me everything about the Zindi, he might be able to do it.
Yeah, but this is the type of situation where, like, we're getting his telling of
things. You think
he's
an unreliable narrator?
He is an unreliable narrator, and he could very well be a fucking horrible monster.
Yeah.
True.
That eats women, you know? We don't know.
Yeah. But
But I bet he could make you think it was cool while it was happening, so if you gotta go.
He makes a damn good pizza.
The pizza did look good.
One thing that I thought was missing from this was any sense that Hoshi was sort of tempted by the offer at any point, because
that's a good point.
Like,
for a hot second, it was like, "Oh, this is the food like your family made you at one point."
Like, it would be nice if she was kind of charmed by it, because even in that scene, she still seemed pretty creeped out by him. Like, she
because his head looks like that.
Well, yeah, but like, she left that dinner abruptly without having eaten anything because he brought up some memory that he had stolen from her.
Yeah, just take the pizza with you, bitch.
Yeah. So I kind of wish that they had made her more charmed by him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it would have been good if she was sort of into it at first and then was like, eh.
I mean, it's tricky because it's like, on the one hand, it's nice to see someone on the show have a normal human reaction. Like, this is fucking weird and creepy.
Well, it's also a normal human reaction to think like, oh wow, I kind of sympathize with his plight. I would like to help him in some way.
Yeah.
That isn't, like, you know, endangering me and my crew.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that would have also made for a more interesting story. Like, maybe if he had been less creepy from the off.
Yeah. He started really creepy.
And then she
When he was mimicking Phlox, it was just normal Phlox. Normal, true. Creepy amount of Phlox.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, actually, I'm not going to lie. I've never been so attracted to Phlox. That was pretty good. And then...
But yeah, like, maybe if he'd start off less weird so that she could kind of sympathize with him and it wouldn't feel odd. But then she finds the graves and it's like, ah! And then he gets kind of creepy and it amps up a little and...
Well, again, though, like, having partners die naturally of old age after living a nice and fulfilled life with you isn't creepy. It would have been less creepy if he had just been like, by the way, I've had several wives. We had wonderful long lives together. I just lived for a long time.
Why would that come up in the 2 days she's met him, though?
Well, because he's trying to get her to stay.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if you've got this graveyard,
yeah,
you should probably admit up front it's there.
And also, anytime you tell anybody they can't go somewhere, they're going there. So you might as well just get ahead of it.
Yeah, like, you've read her mind. You know humans. We're the worst. There are several different cultures that have stories based around people doing things they were explicitly told not to do.
Not to be taken internally. Challenge accepted. That's how I ate a whole tube of Neosporin.
Do not eat. I don't fucking think so.
Oh, God.
That yeah, allegedly my little miniatures that I've been making are not edible, but to that I say, I don't think so.
Yeah, I would be interested to learn a little more about, like, you know, like, I like the idea that led to him. It's like, you know, my people are freaked out by my powers, so they exile me. But I live a crazy long time, and that's like a twofer, you know?
You want, like, they live a long time, his people, or just him?
I don't know, I assume the whole species, but who knows? He's the only one we've met, so it could just be people with these weird abilities. Or maybe he's been, you know.
Yeah, I was wondering if that was made explicit.
He pulls a what's it from Man of the People, sucks the life out of the companions over
that
time.
Asshole.
Yeah. Like, I kind of appreciate that they've left his situation a bit more ambiguous. Like, again, he seems like an unreliable man narrator, so who knows what he said was true and wasn't, and it's kind of machine.
He does seem fairly earnest.
Like, true.
He doesn't I don't think they were trying to give us the idea that he's being dishonest, but...
Yeah, he's
the
just...
The info that he does give us does seem, like, valid.
Yeah. And, again, if you're, you know, as long-lived and isolated as he is, because there are presumably gaps between each of his many lovers, you kind of forget how to people. He also may have never been taught how to people. We don't know how early he was kicked off of his home world.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, it was a concept that's interesting.
Yeah. It is interesting.
Tell you, this dude's definitely chucking out his copy of the game, though. That whole negging thing wasn't working.
God, the beginning of the episode, like, freaking Archer and Phlox are also not taking any of what Hoshi's saying seriously. When she's saying, you know, there was a man in my room. Oh, we all think that. Reed the same thing. Reed was also, what am I looking for? Gaslighting her.
Mm. Everybody sees a man in their room sometimes.
It happens to me nightly. Reed, what is wrong with you?
Well, yeah, no, like I said, he's got that screaming face inside his medicine cabinet.
Well, it's interesting, too, because, like, this is exactly what she dreamed, so it lends credence to her dream that, like, no one takes her seriously.
True.
I know, and I think one of you brought up as we were watching, like, just a couple weeks ago, she turned into a Lokek. Like, that could be easily be something that has to do with this, but of course it's not because we don't ever bring that episode up again.
Yeah, like, that would have been better than just being like, I think you're nuts. He could have been like, it could be a side effect of the Lokek thing. I mean, last week, Captain Archer was all scabby. That's the world's worst Phlox impression. I apologize.
It's like some Seth MacFarlane in there.
Yeah, I don't know what that was.
Yeah, it was kind of Stewie-esque.
Stewie, maybe a little Roddy McDowell thrown in for fun.
And I was saying that you would have been a good actor. why would we say that? Fucking Jiminy Glick. You keep getting away. He keeps pulling me back.
And I've never seen more of that show than an ad for it.
But Jiminy, no one has.
I've never seen more of that show than on this podcast.
Seriously. I think you do a perfect impression, Jake.
I don't do it. That's Kaylin's thing.
You've done one. You've done it pretty good, too, though, I would say.
She's the Glickster of the
group. The Glickster! No!
Oh, my God. If they've gotten him on as a Ferengi, they should.
Martin Short?
Yeah. He's a little fella.
I don't think we can afford Martin Short. Especially now with all that Only Murders in the Building money.
True.
I don't think they can afford a whole lot on this show because they keep entirely forgetting the Makos exist. Like, literally. And I fucking get very angry at Archer for this because it's the easiest fucking thing. Oh, Archer. Tarquin wants me to stay on a planet with him by myself for days. Oh, I don't know about that, Hoshi. Seems like a bad idea. No, I promise. It'll be okay. Well, if you say so. No, Archer. Leave her a chaperone. That's fucking rule one, is you don't go on missions alone.
Buddy system.
He even said when he first showed up with her, and he was like, what the fuck? He was like, captains have to be around first contact. Starfleet protocol?
Also, I don't trust you. Don't trust you.
No.
No one trusts this guy, and yet we were like, Hoshi's expendable. Fuck this bitch.
Poor Hoshi.
When, like I said, we have these Makos on the ship doing nothing. Son of a bitch.
Oh, I meant to say, Jake, to your point earlier, part of the reason, too, he may have not reached out to T'Pol could just be that because she's got psychic abilities, she's just could probably... She probably just naturally puts up barriers without even thinking about it that Hoshi wouldn't have.
Also, I'm sure he knows that T'Pol's not going to put out, so why even bother?
Well, she'd see right through him.
Yeah. I don't know. She gives great massages, I hear.
Oh, God.
I like his robe. It was a good robe.
Oh, his robe was great. Sweet his robe. House was
yeah,
great.
Yeah, and the makeup was cool.
Yeah.
Cool character.
Yeah, I like that it was, like, very different.
No offense to the actor under all the makeup. We see him for real a few times. I remember when I first showed him, I was thinking, like, wow, you appeared as the world's most generic white man. And that's saying something. When you're on a show with Scott Bakula, to somehow be more generic and white than him is impressive. But I think it was mostly the hair, because I saw photos of the actor, and he seemed a little more distinctive. But something about the combination of his profile and the pompadour was just like, you know, I told an AI to give me a white guy,
yeah,
and
yeah.
There he is.
He just went into Hoshi's mind for, like, what do these things look like? What can I look like? Just pick, just give me an example of a prototypical one of them.
Prototickle.
Prototickle.
God, it is like an AI, though, and he winds up with, like, six fingers on one hand.
Yeah, that's a prototickle, all right.
Killed Inigo Montoya's father.
Prepared to die.
Yep.
Well, sure was an episode.
Yeah. So, meanwhile, the other side of the...
It's weird that we only watched one episode this week.
Yeah, the other side of the episode is the let's go find some spheres thing, mm-hmm. in which, you know, as usual, T'Pol is 1,000% right. Oh, I bet there's a sphere exactly right there.
Which is conveniently not just super close to us, but also super close to fucking Eric over there.
Tarquin?
Yeah, sorry. The Phantom of the Opera's name is Eric.
Oh, sure.
But they don't reveal that except in the book, not in the musical.
Nah.
But it also seems like there are spheres everywhere.
True, so, but they didn't know that at first.
They didn't know that at first.
So yes, that admittedly at the end does solve the conveniently nearby problem. But the fact that they happen to be near one that also happened to be near this dude, like, that's a little more... But yes, you're right. I guess you're probably... What does it say? You're never more than however many feet away from a rat in a city. You're never more than, like, 5 light years from a sphere in the expanse.
Yes.
Yeah, so these spheres could be interesting. Like, I find their existence... compelling in terms of if they want to do something with it.
Yeah,
in
there's like
we'll
a mystery component.
Exactly. I like the reveal when T'Pol like shows us in a really great like little graphic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Captain, we found this one sphere here. He said, "Oh, could there be a third?" She's like, "Wait for it, bitch. I got a PowerPoint of this to show you."
Nice try, fuckface.
Please save questions to the end.
But yeah, honestly, like, that is more interesting than the plot of the season. I mean, I presume they're going to dovetail. Again, I'm not just trying to foreshadow. I honestly don't remember how important they end up being. But maybe that just should have been it from the beginning.
Yeah.
Maybe it was just no 9/11 bullshit. They're like, John, you've proven yourself to be a right pain. I mean, great captain. So in order to get
legally a nuisance.
We're going to send you off to this really dangerous area of space to prove how good of an explorer we are and not just to get you killed. And they're just going here for the sake of going there, which, you know, hey, Star Trek, you know, we're explorers. Mm. So it's like, okay, this area, it's weird. It's all strange and full of shenanigans and the Vulcans are afraid of it. You're going to go there and just look into it. And that could have been the plot. Like, these weird spheres, what's going on? I mean... The amount of advancement to make these things must be mind-bending.
Yeah, and then you get a, like, weird anomaly of the week, which
yeah.
is fine for Star Trek.
Yeah, and you don't have to have John running around, he can still run around and shout at everyone, but it can be for different reasons every week, instead of just,
I think one element which would have potentially been cool is if this is a region of space where the Vulcans are afraid to go or can't go in
yeah.
this space, you know, we, like... Humanity, Earth, has always been playing second fiddle to the Vulcans. Like, it's like, all right, we discovered Warp 5 engine, and Vulcans are like, nice one,
we
Earth.
We could tractor you at Warp 5.
You know, so humanity isn't making any real advancements of their own. They're just kind of just doing what the Vulcans did a few hundred years ago. So it'd be interesting if there was bits where, like, the Enterprise goes into this place where the Vulcans literally can't go, and then suddenly they're making interesting discoveries.
Which would just be another decent reason to explain why humanity, despite being really quite late to the game as compared to other species, is so important in the space of 100 years.
Yeah, like maybe they make first contact with, you know, some species that...
Whatever this guy was.
The Vulcan, yeah. Like the Vulcans, like powerful allies that the Vulcans haven't dealt with before.
And they could have maybe kind of tried to put a little bit of kibosh on the whole, like, rivalry with Vulcans thing, which they de-emphasize anyway as time has gone on. But, like, if they're going because the Vulcans went and said, like, look, there's various space we can't go to for some reason. Maybe you want to try. And it's like, you're trusting us with a thing? And it's like,
so
yeah.
So off your ass for a season.
Or what if they had been sent in there to rescue one of the stricken Vulcan ships originally?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they decide, and then when they discover that, no, they're all dead already, they just,
Yeah, but maybe that's when they start to stumble across whatever mystery and decide to look into it. Like, and then again, you lose this.
Yeah, what if? Yeah, awful what metaphor. If the original mission had been? So Vol comes hat in hand to Starfleet. He's like, "Listen, Vulcan ship went into the Expanse. We've lost contact with them. No Vulcan ship has ever come out. We want you to go get them."
And they could even still have the footage of the other ship that went looking for him, and everyone went screamy crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, so we tried to get him on our own, and this happened. Please save questions for the end. And, yeah, we'd like you to try.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be very interesting. And then you get Jeffrey Combs on
here. I was about to say
Tran.
That.
Tran's like, I gotta be there for some crazy dead Vulcans.
I wanna witness that embarrassment, Pinkskin.
Right. And then we don't need the Makos, which I complain about every week. Yeah. Thus not using the Makos enough.
Yeah, no. This, again, like last week, we are writing a better Enterprise.
I am still interested in the Zindi Council and how much they hate each other and stuff. As we'll see in the next episode we're going to talk about. Like, the Zindi themselves have some threads that could be fun. But yeah, the whole... It's just so American patriotism shit.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
we're going here to save America.
Like,
no matter the stakes, no matter the costs.
Yeah, you know, there could have been a way to incorporate this. Because the Zindi, again, I do enjoy their weird loathing... but reluctant allyship thing, alliance thing. It's you know, so they are fun. I wouldn't want to lose them necessarily. It's just the reason we're meeting them is annoying and bad.
Last thing I wanted to bring up was when Archer and Trip are down on the sphere, and they land on the sphere because Archer's throwing a fit about something, and they almost lose their shuttle pod to bullshit. It's very funny.
Yes.
Yeah, they had to shoot it down.
And then the CGI crash of it down onto the sphere is real rough.
Not great.
But just Tripp's reaction of son of a bitch is real is good for him.
Yeah.
Good for Connor Trinneer.
It was very very Ralphie. Remember to drink your Ovaltine.
Son of a remember to shoot down your shuttle pod.
So like when it's as it's floating away and Archer's like, what happened? I was expecting Tripp to be like, It got away. Yep. Yeah, I do think it was kind of a blue balls, though, that... Okay, that scene happens, and that happens in, like, the last 10 minutes of the episode. And then the next thing we see is, okay, well, we've collected a lot of great data from the sphere, and T'Pol's crunching the numbers.
T'Pol's.
Because
they're spheres.
But we don't actually get any scenes of them working on the sphere.
Yeah, they just, like, instead of something interesting about the sphere, we just watch their shuttle pod float.
Yeah.
Didn't have to have that. Could have just had them go in the sphere, maybe.
Yeah, and I didn't dislike the shuttle pod gag, but it also seems like...
It could have been better spent on
something
more interesting.
Or if they had gotten there earlier in the episode and could have spent more time on the sphere.
Yeah, maybe they're trying to save sphere revelations for later.
Maybe.
Again, I genuinely don't remember. I'm just playing coy.
I'm curious how much of a plan the writers have for the season arc, or if they're just kind of like, saying, oh, this is something we could do next week.
Yeah.
Who knows? That's a good question. We'll remember to build on this. Put a sticky note on the wall.
By the way, I just checked. Connor Trinneer is on Cameo, so we could pay for him to say, remember to drink your Ovaltine, son of a bitch.
Why?
Just
I
saying.
Don't need that.
Connor Trinneer?
Oh, I'm not saying
which
for
one's
me.
Connor Trinneer? Is that Trip?
Trip.
Trinneer.
What's he looking like these days?
Much the same, actually. He's aged well. Speaking of Zindi.
We like them.
Yeah, they're fun. So, on the shipment. Yeah, Beast's... We never do find out Beast's name.
What?
Well, because I called him Eric earlier. I was going to call him the Beast's name, but I don't think they ever say the Beast's name in Beauty and the
Beast.
Adam?
No, I meant...
Oh, in the Beast. He's,
yes.
He's Prince Adam.
Is he?
He's not named in the film, but that is his name.
Okay, yeah. So Adam, now to ruin my own joke, his coordinates turn up trumps, and we have found a Zindi colony where they make... Fuck, not Ketracel. What was it called?
Chemosite.
The Chemosite. Thank you.
Chemosite.
They make Chemosite, and they beam down, they get a sample and confirm, like, yeah, there's definitely, like, Chemosite. This specific kind of Chemosite was in the Zindi Doomsday weapon. And Archer goes full Hulk mode, and he's like, I'm gonna capture one of these guys and be a jerk. And he does. You know, in a shock to all of us from last week, these Zindi Arboreal are apparently sloths. And he captures one of the sloth men.
Oh, they're so slow.
They are. And he's all like, tell me everything you know. And he's like, nothing. I sell to so many people. And he's like, rawr, rawr, rawr. He's like, no, but really, though. And then more Zindi show up, one of the reptilians, and the Degra, who's the, like, weapon guy we've seen a couple times now. And, yeah, basically, Archer kind of wins over the what is the guy's name?
Greylick Durr.
Greylick agrees to, like, kind of fuck with the Chemosite a little, plus Archer sneaks in and puts in a tracking device, and Greylick's like, so what is this being used for? And the weapon maker's like, oh, there's a threat from aliens, and Greylick's like, I really hope you aren't lying to me, John, and John's like, no, we're not crazy warmongers, we're going to murder people.
Yeah, because, like, the rest of the Zindi just said, you're the ones to be afraid of.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, dear. What have I done?
And we get a lot of...
Shit.
Somewhat, you know, we get some Zindi lore, which is probably the most interesting part of the episode.
Data lore.
Again, lore. You should have been behind it all. Yeah, I don't know. That's what it was. I was saying to Jake at one point when we were watching it, it kind of just kept going this episode. It felt longer than a usual one.
It felt pretty long because I think it's because not a ton happens.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of...
It's setting up more stuff for the season, which I understand. It's fine. I liked Greylick Durr a lot.
Yeah.
He's great. I love whenever he, like, gets all high and mighty. He's like, I don't have to tell you shit. This is my job.
Well, yeah. Also, like,
you're
going to
ruin my life.
It teaches Archer a lesson in that... Not every Zindi is part of the Zindi plot to kill all humans.
Yeah, Greylick says, like, specifically at the end, I hope this has taught you that not all Zindi are your enemy. And I'm really curious, as we go forward, let's keep an eye on Archer.
Doubt it.
And how much he remembers this.
Oh, he's not going to remember
because he's not going to remember
this.
No,
he's the worst.
He'll be one of those people... who, like, voted for Brexit because they were sick of all the damn foreigners, but then they look at their friend and they're like, oh, but not you. Not you, everybody else.
Yeah, Greylick's just one of the good ones.
Exactly.
Although, again, in the same breath, in the same episode at one point, when Reed and the Mako are like, let's just blow this place up already, he's like, we're here to stop a war, and remember, they're being manipulated. It's like, oh, you do remember, John, fucking idiot.
When a writer remembers.
Yeah, like, Jesus Christ.
Well, also... I started to speak and I totally forgot what I was going to say.
Yeah, this series inspires that, I'd say.
Yeah, shit. Jeez, what the fuck was
that's what
say?
Happens whenever a writer is in the middle of writing something for the episode.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. No, it's gone.
And it happens mostly right when they were going to give Mayweather a line.
No. Oh, poor Mayweather.
Yeah, why wasn't he piloting that ship to the sphere last episode?
This is the episode.
Archer's a better pilot.
This is the episode where at one point they showed the bridge and it wasn't even Mayweather at the helm.
Oh, poor Anthony Montgomery.
He was there later to get a line. his one every three episodes line, contractually obligated.
You can't expect him to be working all the time.
No, but it is during a crisis when normally you would have the entire kind of senior staff there.
No, maybe he was ill.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you mentioned the B plot. Of this episode, where
with the gun, I didn't.
Yeah.
I forgot about it already.
Yes, Trip, the gun plot.
Trip and Phlox are trying to reverse engineer the Zindi weapon that they got.
Yeah,
the
countermeasures.
Yeah, I fucking love Trip. Do I have permission to take apart the gun? He gave you permission two episodes ago.
The writers forgot that.
He specifically said, Trip, take apart this gun, figure out how it works. And apparently you did nothing for weeks. Good job, Trip.
Again, just...
Nice work, buddy.
Another just... The writer's literally forgetting something they'd already done.
But it seemed like that whole plot kind of went nowhere because they end up having to destroy the gun.
Yeah.
They did potentially discover a way to neutralize the gun with radiation.
No, it was the don't expose them to Omicron radiation. It's good for them.
Yeah, but Delta radiation kills them.
Oh, it does? Okay, I missed that part.
Yeah, Fox figured out that Delta radiation kills them, but Omicron radiation makes them replicate crazy amounts.
So don't let Lur anywhere near them.
Yes.
I did enjoy that we got some Zindi lore.
The sixth Zindi race that the they avians. Wiped out.
Yep.
Oh, so there was a sixth Zindi race. Wow, we are really good at this show,
yeah,
huh?
Except it's not robots, it's burbs.
Yeah, it was burbs.
Well, that makes more sense than robots anyway.
They killed all the burbs? That's so sad.
You know what it was? They were too calm, because so the thing, you know, they blew up their own, well, the insectoids and reptilians specifically.
Oh yeah, they love blowing shit.
Blew up their own planet to end this 100-year-long war that no one can remember why it started.
Definitely because of the reptilians.
And everyone else flees. And they're like, the bird people didn't try to flee. It's like the dumb bastard just thought they'd stay in the air and be fine.
We'll
but then
just
they
fly
forgot.
Away if, if you destroy the planet. You
we don't
fucking
need,
moron.
We don't need the floor. Wouldn't that be amazing if that's really what it was? Aww. They were so arrogant they forgot that, like, you know.
Oh, I want to know what their ships would have looked like. Do they just not have ships?
They'd be bird-shaped.
No. See, Klingons make ships shaped like birds. They make ships shaped like humanoids. Rockets coming out of the feet.
Yeah, the Zindis. Yeah, I don't understand. Okay, if the reptilians and insectoids collaborated to destroy the planet and kill an entire, you know, one of the six races, why are they still on the Zindi Council?
I imagine the Zindi Council has reluctantly come together because of the information they got from whoever their side of the temporal Cold War
is. Still, like, the insectoids and fucking...
Reptiles.
They seem far too volatile to be involved in this.
I prefer the idea that they didn't even unite to blow up their world. They just... One was gonna do it, the other found out, and rather than be stopped them, they're like, we'll do it first! And then they just did it at the same time.
Yeah, they both had entirely different blowing up plans. And then they realized, oh, the other one's doing this too?
I mean, what?
Good, we can make fewer bombs.
Wasn't this also Dr. Evil's plan from the first Austin Powers movie?
He wanted to set the volcanoes to erupt all at once, didn't they, on planets?
Isn't that the second one? The drill?
I thought that was the first one.
Is it the first one? Okay.
I don't remember that. I don't.
So the Zindi just want $1 million.
Yes.
Okay.
That was the reptile Zindis call them as like, we want $1 million. Yeah, the second one was the moon base.
Okay, oh, that's right. Moon Unit Alpha and Zappa or whatever.
Just a little prick.
Speaking of a moon, we learned the Zindi now have a new device to test, and they decide to test it on.
Yes.
It's like, you guys do not plan fucking at all.
So you realize, why did you test the first one on Earth?
Okay, it makes great audio when you talk into your hands, Chris.
They fucked up.
Zindi, I still love you. I still want you to win secretly. But you're doing it wrong. Do better.
Oh, yeah, that's why I said while we were watching that the... same much as the fact they have the kind of hairy faces and the weird, very sci-fi jumpsuits. The arboreal Zindi give very, Planet of the Apes vibes.
They do.
Oh, yeah.
With their, furry gloves.
Yeah. And... yeah. I feel like I was talking about it last week, but it's like every... Maybe I didn't, but every, branch of the Zindi is a different kind of, sci-fi creature.
We got the fly.
I was going to the fly or any sort of, what is it, them or whatever with the giant ants or something.
Yeah, them.
The reptilians, again, is very, 50s B-movie.
I mean, they're Saris from
They totally
Dallas
are.
Quest.
Even
oh,
with
fuck,
those,
they are!
Little things coming out.
Wait a minute! Because Star Trek decided to return the favor such as it was?
Nice.
I do, one thing I kind of like is that all of the Zindi, although they do look very different, at least the three that we've seen the most of, which are the reptilians, the humans, and the sloths, they all have certain, hues in the makeup.
Yeah, I noticed that in this
one. Like, they all have, like, nostrils on the side of their face.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if the dugongs do as well.
I don't know.
I have to get a closer look.
So, yeah, they have, like, regular nose nostrils, but they also have, like, nostrils on their cheeks.
Yeah, I noticed that, the weird little, like, cheek slit.
And they all have kind of, like, ridged forehead into nose sort of thing going on.
Yeah, which is just clever.
Yeah, so they I like that they give nods to, okay, these clearly come from the same place.
Family, yeah.
They all evolved from the same puddle of goo.
Yeah.
Kind of bird were the avians, do you think?
Macaws.
I'm picturing them as like Rito from Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, that would make the most sense.
But which Legend of Zelda?
Because they changed the newest ones.
They changed dramatically.
The Rito don't look that different from
Wind Waker. Their beaks were more nose-like.
Yeah, I guess they were.
As opposed to actually beaky.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's go with the Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom ones.
Sure, I'll go with that. Man, I got the fucking Dragon Roost Island.
Yeah, that's a good theme
song. Wowzers.
See, I was just gonna start humming the just normal like. Doo, 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 doo,
doo, doo, doo. I love that Reed and Hayes are now immediate best friends because they both want to destroy the compound the moment they get there.
Mm-hmm.
They're already planning. They've already set a whole bunch of mines or explosives around, and Archer has to remind them, "No, we're not doing that yet." And they're like, "But please, Archer." But
for once, I have to be the voice of reason.
Here's the thing, though: if you bring Space Marines on a mission, the one thing they're going to want to do is nuke it from orbit.
Yep.
Because it's the only way to be sure.
Yep. No, Captain, don't use the photon torpedoes. Use those old nuclear weapons you had.
Game over, man.
Game over, man.
Reed got snuck up on by a drone that makes Jetsons noises.
Mm-hmm. Well, to be fair, the sound was added in post, so... the actual drone that was on set that day probably made a different noise.
Dearie dear.
I'm very proud of Archer for not waterboarding Greylick.
Yeah, I was waiting every for him time to be awful.
Yeah, he starts just yelling at him constantly. And it's like, oh God, I'm worried for Greylick right now.
Greylick didn't give a fuck.
No, I loved him.
He was great. It's like, good. This is exactly what John deserves. Someone who's just like, what, you think you're tough? Good. Fuck with me, loser. I don't care. I've been doing this job for 40-odd years. You think the first prick I've ever met? I've been selling fucking Ketris. What's it called? I've already forgotten again.
Chemosite.
Jesus Christ.
More Ketris.
Chemosite to that fucking reptile dickhead for years, and I hate him.
So what exactly was the thing that happened with the chemosite at the end? So Greylick fucked with the sampling that they were giving to the Zindi.
Yeah.
And then Archer just easily sneaks aboard the ship after the shipment has been dropped off and swaps one out. I really assumed Greylick already had the one that they were supposed to swap.
Yeah, they probably would have been smarter to do
much.
Like,
much.
Sneaky Archer was very...
Unnecessary.
It felt like he would have gotten trapped immediately. It makes the Zindi look unobservant entirely.
Well, considering that this base is like... Again, it sounds like chemosite is used in just all sorts of perfectly not weapon-based applications. So, like, yeah, and they're kind of isolated. Like, yeah, they probably don't worry about security that much here. Now, admittedly...
Yeah, but on the Zindi ship. Because that's where... Isn't that where Archer goes
where he,
and...
Yeah, he broke on
Archer
into the
goes
ship.
Onto the ship and makes the swap there.
I thought that was on the compound.
No!
That doesn't make fucking sense then.
Because Greylock was
distracting them
so they wouldn't turn around and see Archer
leave
the ship.
I thought they don't
have like cameras in their cargo bay.
Well, they don't have any sensors whatsoever.
Apparently.
Because or at least really poor sensors, because the reptilian is like, oh, why did you destroy our drone? Oh, well, because it was scaring the
beetles I was trying to eat.
Things I was trying to hunt away. Well, then, who else was with you? We detected other life signs. No, I was by myself. Okay, I guess that explanation is sufficient.
Yeah, a lot of this is only working because the Zindi are fucking idiots sometimes.
The drones weren't making a live feed because they took Archer's picture.
Also, they can't distinguish Zindi life signs from other species. They couldn't be like, huh, it looks like he's out there with three fucking aliens. That's weird.
And also,
nope,
like...
those are bugs.
There was no sign that he was carrying a gun ever. They didn't wonder where... I don't know. Yeah. They ain't
too bright. Your fools.
Like, it made... I thought he was just distracting them because he was, like, sneaking in and out of their own compound. Not a ship. That really...
Yeah, because you see Reed and Hayes with their little binoculars from Brookstone. Staring down the trail. Okay, Captain. Coast is clear now. You can go now.
I missed that. There was, like, one moment I was looking up an actor, and that must have been them. Jesus.
Yeah, they're on top of this.
That would make more sense. Again, the sloth guys don't worry too much. Or even if security did see him, you know, they'd be trying to run after him, but the fastest they can go is, like, 2 miles per hour.
It's pretty quick, isn't it?
Nah. Much faster than those drones.
Mm. Those drones were very fast.
Yeah.
They covered, like, 50 meters in 2 seconds. Pretty
actually?
Quick. Yeah, because Reed was calling out how far they
were. They're 400 meters away. They're 350 meters away now. Wow, that was fast.
Whoever they are, they're bloody fast.
Well, yeah, because at first I was like, are they being chased by people? No, they were robots. Maybe those are the robot Zindi.
Or the guns.
So hang on. Explain for me again, because either I missed this or the episode had no idea what the fuck it was doing.
Probably that.
Possibly both. We're in Greelick's house when the Zindi arrive early to pick up their shipment.
Mm-hmm.
They manage to just ignore some other Zindi arboreals that come to pick up Greelick to like help with the handoff. Then we decide to go hide in the woods for reasons.
Yeah, well, it's because Greelick told them that the reptilians will come looking for me if you know, but.
And so, Archer did not yet know, like, trust Greelick enough to say, okay, go tell him, go deal with this part.
Well, yeah, he offered. And we'll come back in 5 minutes. Greelick offered to go talk to them and mislead them, but...
But instead, Archer kidnapped him.
Well, it wasn't kidnapping. It was we're going to go.
We're going to forcibly bring you into the woods against your will.
Well, when you put it that way, it does sound kind of kidnapping.
Technically, that is kidnapping, yeah.
I kept expecting him... I didn't expect this. It would have been funny if... He said, okay, what do we do with Greelick now? Well, we can't leave him here or he'll give information, but we also can't just leave with him or they'll figure it out. I know. We'll leave him with Tarquin.
Yes. Send him to mine.
He's so lonely.
He needs company.
Oh, I wanted company, but, you know, company I could bang, and I'm not really into this guy, so, pass.
Hard pass. How offended would you be if you were that Zindi? Like, really? You'd rather be alone for the next 100 years? Yes, I would. I would rather be alone for the next 100 years. Damn, dog. That cuts me real deep. Maybe, like, good. Get out. Don't bleed on my floor before you leave.
I wonder how long Zindi lived, because Greelick mentioned he'd been in charge of the facility already for 40 years. So, like, you don't start off in charge. You got to build up to that.
We have no idea how old they were, because they... just look like old guys, but they just look like monkeys, which look like old guys.
Sloths, apparently.
Sure, according to the description from Netflix. Or
I mean, it's also how the actors are credited in the as sloth.
Well, like I said, I did.
Yeah, on Plex.
No, in actual, on if you go to Memory Alpha, they're also are they listed sloths as sloths there as well.
Yeah, apparently. That's bizarre. Apparently, in Extinction, all of us missed. This was on Memory Alpha, listeners. Phlox does suggest that a branch of them may have been evolved from arboreal sloths. So when we were all having good laughs last week about sloth Zindi, they'd been staring us in the face the whole time.
Yeah, because I've only ever seen them referred to as arboreals.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, because sloths just sound stupid. You know?
Yeah, it does sound kind
of stupid.
When
you hear sloth, you think of, there's some slow dopey thing, but arboreal sounds kind of
badass. Yeah, it sounds like they're learning to use... tools and shit.
I think they should have done Ursine as a Zindi.
Is that pig-like?
Bear-like.
There we go. Yeah.
That'd be cute.
Yeah. Winnie the Zindi.
Zindi the Pooh.
Or arboreal, they could have been Ents. You know, big tree dudes.
Mm. Just what we need
like
is
actual, animate. Like, literal arboreal.
Mm-hmm. Or, big or fucking rabbits.
Or as they call it in France, the arboreal cheese.
And if they have northern lights, they'd be arborealis.
Yeah, I love that.
I did really like all of Greylick's furniture. His chairs looked really cool.
Yeah, they were fun.
They looked like they were carved out of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I like that a lot. It had that kind of like, you just live a rural, like, rustic lifestyle in some trees.
Like people from New Hampshire.
in sloths.
Yeah, meanwhile, in the B plot, they get this weapon, they dissect it, they eat the bugs out of it, clearly. And then Trip and Phlox utterly refuse to listen to wisdom from T'Pol, as they always fucking do. I'm like, no, we're just going to plan it, we're just going to fire it here in the middle of engineering or wherever.
No, it was the armory, where there are missiles and shit.
Trip, god damn it, you should know better than this.
Like, at least go to, like, a mostly empty cargo bay.
Go to some moon. And then well, like, yes. No, we have no time. Why not? You have lots of fucking time.
Like, you're literally orbiting a moon.
What were you doing last week when you just puttered around to find a sphere? Go somewhere, find an open space, and shoot there.
Yeah, but again, even if you insist on doing it on the ship, don't do it in the room with the torpedoes.
I think doing it on the ship was a fucking...
Oh, yeah, no. I agree. I'm in full agreement.
Get off the ship.
But if you have to do it on the ship for some moron reason, use Daniel's quarters. They're empty. No.
If you have to do it on the ship for some moron reason, don't.
Actually...
Don't, Trip. Bad.
They must have finally, like, cleared out and reassigned Daniel's quarters, right?
I have no idea.
Like they have to have.
All of the Makos are staying in there now.
They're all in that locker.
Yeah, because it has more room.
Yes.
That's actually just where Trip hit a bunch of fucking, like, moonshine. He brought up a bunch from you know.
Pecan pie.
Yeah, pecan pie and moonshine. Just
from the moon.
Yeah, I did love the scene, though, when Trip is rushing to beam the gun into space, and he runs around a corner and just totally takes down some poor bastard that's just walking down the hall.
That was a great fall. It was. Good for that guy. Fall.
Well done on that stunt performer.
Also, very nice of the weapon to come with a countdown for
you. Yeah, seriously.
Oh, it looks like it's doing some kind of countdown, Cap'n.
And he's still like you've worked out as a countdown, but you still have to wait for T'Pol to scan it to realize maybe it's gonna blow up.
She just goes, she scans it on her own.
Maybe she thought it was almost New Year, you know?
You know, it's just like, to be fair, there is precedent in Star Trek of people seeing a countdown and not realizing that something's about to blow up.
True.
Get out of there!
Classic. It's talking.
Yeah.
I think Reed needs a secret knock.
Yeah.
Because when the other sloths come to the door, knock, 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 Greylock, you home? The Zindi are here. No, hide under the tables if time. And then Reed comes up, knock, 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 same knock, guy.
Yeah.
Come on. How are we supposed to know it's you?
I mean, honestly, let's be fair to Reed. He probably suggested it ages ago, and Archer probably called him an asshole.
Yeah.
With all the different variations of Reed alarm. Do you like this version or this version? Also, we need a secret knock.
Maybe your best friend's handshake. Reed does not know how to ask to be friends.
Aww.
If anyone on that ship is lonely, it's Reed.
That's true. That should have been a Reed episode. Might have been slightly weird.
He might have stayed, though.
Yeah. Because
Harker makes some pineapple cake.
Make all kinds of pineapple things. Oh, cute.
I think it was Hawaiian pizza, wasn't it?
It looked like it, yeah.
It was Hawaiian. Oh, I bet it was delicious. It was. Fuck.
But she had like one bite.
I know.
And then she threw out all the rest of the food, including that fancy dessert
that he made. That looked like a jellyfish.
Well, yeah, but he... The thing is, he's like, I think you'll like it. He knows she'll like it. He knows her fucking brain.
Yeah, so no, I know. I mean, trust him. I agree. Well, I don't know, trust him.
Well, trust him to give you tasty food.
Yes, yes.
I wouldn't trust him with anything else.
No. Because we don't know what he does with that egg when other people aren't around.
That's true. It could be the Gwyneth Paltrow egg.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
It was pretty big, though.
We don't know what a species tortoise is like.
That's true. That's a good point.
Also, he's maybe been training it over the years.
Yeah, he's had a lot of time. He's had a lot of time. That's true, right? So we hear about, like, alien species like the Vulcans that live far longer than humans. But humans start to look older as a result of gravity, right? Like, gravity starts pulling on, like, stretching your skin so, like, you get wrinkles and stuff. So... Would Vulcans, like, why would Vulcans look young for longer? Like, why does Tuvok look like he's in his 30s when he's
is it, in his I don't think hundreds. It's only gravity. Yeah, I think there's also some level of like
decay.
Yes,
well, gravity and sun exposure. We know that Vulcan has a lot of sun. So I don't know. I think that Vulcans have been lying about they're using like Vulcan years for their age, but like there's the Vulcan star system is such that like 1 year on Vulcan is, you know, 10 years on Earth or something.
What are they, Klingon kids?
Yes. So yeah, they're just counting differently. They're not actually older than us.
You know, except that we see Sarek in two different series.
Yeah. And Spock.
Could be, they could have been in suspended animation for a while. Yeah. Falcons. They're funny. They're like cat people.
No, it's the Cajuns.
Well, Vulcans act more cat-like, I think.
How so?
They're aloof. Occasional outburst. Cats
love showing emotion, though.
Psychic control.
Mm. Pointed ears.
Mm. Pointy ears, that's the
scratchy
real...
tongue.
Yep. extra eyelid.
True. Cations are, in fact, a Vulcanoid species. There we go.
Weird. I have no segue. Let's move on.
The opposite of pointy ears are giant round ones. Like the Ferengi. Like our good buddy, Mr. Quark.
Oh, I love him. He's the best.
You're a mean one, Mr. Quark.
Doodly-doo.
No, he's an amazingly friendly one. Sometimes overly friendly.
You are such a scumbag. I really wish you'd die, Mr. Quark.
No, disagree. I love Quark.
He is like the rest of his family, terrible at being a Ferengi. He just tries so much harder to be a good one.
He tries to be a good Ferengi amongst all these failures.
He's got the lobes for business.
No, he doesn't.
Moogie says that at one point.
Yeah, she's being nice. She's got the lobes for business.
Well, between him and Rom, he does.
Rom's got the lobes for engineering. I'm going to go first.
Okay.
Good things he's done.
Good Quark moments.
He gives information to the fledgling resistance in behind the lines.
Sure, I believe you. I don't remember this.
Yeah, he gets Damar shit-faced.
Oh, yeah.
And then gets a little pissed drunk himself and is like, I want the Federation back. I want to sell root beer.
And it's not easy to get Damar shit-faced because that guy's always
He's an alcoholic, big time.
Oh, yeah.
He protects the unconscious Nog in the Siege of AR-558.
Nice.
Good job.
And he prevents Klingon shenanigans with the power of accountancy in the House of Quark.
All right. Good. All right. I'm going to have... I mean, I know it's his mom and he kind of had to, but organizing the group to go and rescue Moogie in The Magnificent Ferengi.
I was hoping someone would mention that one.
Of course it's Jake that mentions that one, because that's his favorite.
It's not my favorite, but I do like it.
It's such a fun episode. But I thought, I'm gonna avoid stereotyping myself and hope someone else says that one.
And again, like going back to what we were saying about Quark not being a good Ferengi.
At all.
But being sometimes a good man.
Yes.
His coming around in his acceptance of Pell.
Yeah, I love them together so much.
Because at first, you know, as any Ferengi would be, he was like, no, take your clothes off immediately, woman.
Mm-hmm.
But then he stands up for her
and like puts himself and like gives up all of his gamma or delta quadrant.
That's right.
Gamma quadrant. You're mixing up my quadrants. All of his gamma quadrant profits.
Forgot about that part.
And he gives her some Latin Vegas to go start a new life.
Yeah, so.
Keep safe, pal.
I also had Grilka on my list, but I didn't specify, so I'm gonna say it's gonna be looking for Parmok in all the wrong places.
I like that one too.
That works.
Just so we have a little variety.
More Grilka. How about you, Caitlin? You got some good Quark moments?
I was also gonna bring up Grilka, though I guess him saving the house through accountancy is actually the better moment.
Yeah, that's pretty badass.
He's just sitting there going through his spreadsheet while the Klingons look so confused.
Yeah, I also love the moment of he's got the Batleth out, throws it down, you won't kill me in cold blood, and I forget the guy's name, but he's like, I fucking will, and they're like, wait a minute.
Probably a Duras.
Now the Duras aren't smart enough to do accountancy like that guy did.
No, I know. I'm just,
Branch family.
I don't know, come back to me.
Okay. I'm
struggling.
Well, I'll give my tops and you can either add to or I can keep reading tops if you want. Because I had a lot of, mostly, so many of my great Quark moments are with him with his lady friends.
Mm.
Because the people that he actually, like, likes make very good Quark scenes. So I mm-hmm. had a lot of Gwilka scenes. I had the Pell scene. But the other lady moment that I really liked, even though she was not a great actress, but I loved Quark in the scene with Natima Lang and Profit and Loss when they profess their love for each other. And he's like, no, I have to save you from the Cardassians who will kill you. And he acted his fucking ass off in that episode because she was not pulling for
weight. Oh, the Cardassian woman?
Yes.
Yes, I was thinking of that earlier too, and I was trying to remember that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I loved Quark in that episode.
So me too, except that he was kind of like, I'll give them this thing, but you have to stay. Kind of pulling a... What's his name from the episode we just watched?
Tarquin.
Yeah, that.
A little bit. But it's also because she would get killed if she went with the other Cardassian.
Well, and also, like, it was clear that there was a genuine love between them. So.
That's true.
Yeah, I liked their love. It was very cute.
I thought that I know that he did it for the wrong reasons, but when he goes to, like, try to figure out what happened to the Negus... And he has to go and, like, see the wormhole aliens.
Oh, God. Wait. Oh, that one. Okay, when the Negus comes back with his personality flip-flopped.
Well, what's that called?
That is... There's a prophet in it. Probably yeah, motive.
There we go. Yeah, so it's definitely a Ferengi pun title.
Like, it's definitely not, like, a good thing, but it is a good... I don't know. It's a good instinct on his part to try to help the Grand Negus. Granted, he did it because he was like, what? He's not being greedy and shitty
anymore.
Yeah,
he was doing it to
clearly
capitalize.
Clearly something wrong here. But it was still pretty brave for a little Ferengi.
Sure, I remember hating that episode.
Oh, so. Yeah, it's not a good episode.
Did I like that episode?
You loved that episode.
Okay, it feels like one I liked.
Yeah, because it was a goofy comedy, and I couldn't stand an instant of it. Shockingly, a goofy comedy that I could stand and thought was had some really interesting Quark stuff was the brief time that he's Grand Negus in The Negus. And I just remember him being... utterly charming and quite an asshole, which was absolutely perfect for that role. So that was cute. That's high on my list. And last one I'm going to give him is... Oh, when he and Zial break out Kira et al. In Sacrifice of Angels after they pretend that they have this Hasperot souffle.
Right.
And they break in and Quark shoots some fucking... Jem'Hadar? Cardassians? Somebody.
Breen? Could it be Breen?
It wasn't Breen. I remember it was Breen. Because
nothing was changed.
Nothing was changed. It was just, they broke them out of prison.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's when they went and, like, took down the minefield or some interesting thing happened, and it was all thanks to Quark, and I gave him lots of credit for it.
Yeah, good for him.
Do you have others you want to mention, Caitlin?
No, I feel like I kind of snuck in two more. I'm good.
Well, you added,
Well, I agreed with Ames on the...
Right.
That was one I was trying to think of, because he does sort of, like, give up his, Which, I mean, you know, probably could have got a lot of money for that cloaking device.
But he is a Ferengi.
Oh, yeah. And most of his Ferenginess leads to bad shit.
Yep.
I bet you've got all the top things I have.
Maybe not. We'll see. He was going to make that Kira program for Jeffrey Combs in Meridian.
I don't have that one.
Gross.
You know, he was totally going to just go through with that. He tried to sabotage Nog getting into the academy.
Yeah, a couple of times.
Yeah, I was thinking of facets, specifically.
Yeah.
And inevitably, the fuck clause.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, two of mine are in there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what episode the fuck clause was actually in. It was an early one.
It's like... Captive Pursuit.
Okay.
Very early, yeah.
Yeah, because the third episode. Like.
Yeah. So yeah, I had Kira hologram.
Nice.
Stealing Kira's likeness For Meridian.
For Jeffrey Combs?
Yep, very gross.
How did I forget that one?
Yeah, that was like one of the first ones that I thought of.
And wasn't that Jeffrey Combs' first appearance?
Yes.
Yeah, because he's like, he's neither Brunt nor Wayoon.
He's just some yellow fella.
Creepy motherfucker. And I also had Captain Pursuit, Dabo Girl, Contracts.
Disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I guess to differentiate myself slightly, I'm going to put out facilitating the crew that came in to steal Dax.
Oh, yeah.
In Invasive Procedures.
Good one.
I thought of that one, but he didn't actually know what their endgame was,
yeah,
which is why I left it off.
He was doing crime.
True.
The crime that he was doing was helping them.
Yeah. It wasn't a fun crime like his crimes normally
it's
are.
Like there's a law in some places. I don't know if it's everywhere, but there's some places where it's a law that if you are in the process of committing a felony, and somebody dies as a result of that felony, even if your felony isn't murder, you can be charged with murder for their death.
Yeah,
because it was a death that occurred in the commission of a felony.
Well, and if you're just, you know, any part, even if you're not the one that does it, you can be charged with murder as an accomplice.
Yeah, exactly. So, if Jadzia had not survived.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Then I would have held Quark.
Oh, very responsible.
Quite I think responsible. They were planning to, yeah. Like, Odo was particularly pissed. But then he got stuffed in a bucket or something.
Yes.
Suitcase full of Odo.
Yeah.
So you said you had some overlap, Caitlin.
Yeah, definitely the sex clause in his employment contract. I agree with the Nog sabotage one. Yep, the one specifically sabotage. Where he fucks with the computer program so he fails.
Yeah, that's facet.
Yeah, that's facet.
And, but also, the fact that he, like, tried to take advantage of dropping the boy off at school to also sell some illegal goods gets them in fucking Area 51.
Appropriately, he was selling chemosite.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, shit.
What was the name of that? It was Little Green Men.
Yep.
I'm glad...
But I mean, there are plenty of reasons to, like, not being... Lots of different things to be mad at him about.
Oh, yeah. Okay, my top three have not been mentioned, and there's a theme. There's a theme in my top three, and I'm very angry about this theme, because fuck goddamn Quark. First thing, he sexually harasses one of his Dabo girls and then blackmails her about it in Profit and Lace.
Mm.
And then by the end, hasn't learned a fucking thing, goes right back and does it again. Disgusting, Quark.
Mm-hmm.
Later in Profit and Lace, he gives Boogie a fucking heart attack.
Oh, yeah.
Entirely his literally. Fault, because he just yells at her constantly about something until she fucking...
Keels over.
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
Me too. I try not to think about that episode.
In what was originally like a kind of horrifying scene, but I guess like I think that was directed by Alexander Siddig. Fuck goddamn it, Quark. And number three, just the rest of Profit and Lace.
So basically all 3 years.
All three of mine. That's fair. Just, that is fucking fair. Oh my god, I hate all of it. I hate that.
It's a terrible episode.
Yeah, but by far one of the worst of the series.
I hate how Quark sees women in Profit and Lace and how he utterly fails at doing anything and portraying women's needs, and I just all of it is bad and deserves being on a worst moments list because I hate it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is bad.
Oh, there's so much like stupid shit he pulls. Like, you know, whatever he was doing after Jadzia died, and he made it all about him somehow when Worf was the one that was mourning.
Yeah, he's like, I should be taking her to Stovacor. She wasted her life with you, and then like. Tries to go after Ezri a little bit.
He does, and I hate that.
Yeah, it's so gross.
I feel like goddamn.
But everybody who wanted her as Dax wants her as Ezri. Worf, Julian,
Quark.
Yeah. I mean,
and that one, you know,
except me, I only wanted Jadzia. Ezri sucks.
In his case, too, he was doubly excited because this one was, you know, the new one was closer to his height. Actually, no, he goes also into girl. I think he prefers taller women.
He also makes the wrong choice with Pell.
True.
I get why he can't, why he had to, but it's still not cool.
Still not cool.
God, so much. I mean, like, there are so many times, this is both a slight against his fellow cast members and against us personally, because he unwittingly endangers the lives of four of his fellow castmates when he makes them play Run Along Home.
Yeah.
And then we have to watch it.
Oh, funny. I actually had a moment from that in my goodness.
Well, because remember, he's also... The whole reason he was trying to con the Wadi.
Yeah, again, like pulling crimes that almost...
He was doing a crime and it almost bit him in the ass.
Pulling a crime and almost killing his friends is like his...
I mean, it turned out they were never in any danger.
Yeah, but he didn't know that. Yeah. He does ultimately, take the shorter, less dangerous path when he realizes that they're...
Yeah, like, the thing that made my good list from that episode... was his reaction when he learned that they were his friends. Because he had no idea that they were his friends, and he was just playing a board game.
Yeah.
And then once the chief Wadi there says, oh, they're in danger, they're peril, and he realizes, wait a minute, one of these is Jadzia, and oh god, what am I gonna do? Oh no. And he's actually, like, worried, and it's the first time in the show you've seen him worried.
Yeah, like, actually give a shit about someone other than himself and his profits.
Yeah, and plus, just Armin Shimmerman is just a delight.
True. He's the best. We love him.
Oh, and he also gets into the arms-dealing racket business as usual, because god damn it, Quark.
Mm-hmm.
What a dick. but I love him anyway.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right. But and that's another one where it's like, he does the arms dealing, and then, you know, he's all gung-ho about it, almost because he feels like he's expected to. And then when he actually confronts the reality of the crime, that the weapons that he's involved in are going to kill millions of people, mm-hmm. he ends up, you know, sabotaging the whole deal.
Which is good on him.
Right, exactly.
Like, that is a good character.
Yeah, it's another example of good, bad Ferengi, good person.
Yeah, know? That's a good way to put it.
But he wants to be a good Ferengi and a bad person.
He's just so bad at it because he actually likes these people.
Yeah.
Because he's a well-rounded character. So good for him. So, yeah. Well done, Quark.
Yes.
But the fucking Dabo Girl contracts.
Yeah, that's all.
Inexcusable.
Just plain gross.
Yeah. You know what else is inexcusable?
Watching more Enterprise?
Yep, but we're gonna do it.
Oh, bad. Yeah. Bad idea, us.
So bad. Oh, no. So next week, we will be looking at Twilight and North Star.
I remember one of those being good and one of them Chris might like. No, interesting. Oh, this is fascinating.
It's probably stupid if it's the one I'm thinking of.
Which one?
North Star. Not North Star. Yeah, North Star.
Twilight's supposed to be the good one.
Yeah,
okay.
Twilight is good.
I don't remember Twilight. Who's our person?
Rom!
Oh, nice, Rom! We'll be continuing our Ferengi ride with the best worst Ferengi. No,
see? That's not
the mother. The mother's the best worst Ferengi.
No, she's just the best Ferengi.
Yeah, which one is the best worst Ferengi?
Nog.
Mm. I'd say Nog.
Or Rom. It could be Rom, too, but I like Nog much better.
Yeah.
Because Moogie's actually a great Ferengi.
That's true, but then she completely up... Anyway, we'll get to her. Are we knowing her?
No.
Oh, yeah, none of her. Too bad. Anyway.
She's in 3 episodes.
Yeah, I just realized. So, anywho, it depends. One of them mostly incapacitated from a heart attack.
Oh, North Star.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one.
Is it one Chris is going to like?
Nope.
No. No one's going to like this.
Oh, really? Shit. Bad. I only know that there's cowboys, so I assumed it's Spectre of the Gun, which is fun.
Yeah, it's
damn it. Enterprise. Son of a bitch.
Yeah.
It's a Western in the stupidest way.
Why?
Yeah.
Well, look forward to that. Oh, wow.
Am I keeping that in?
Yeah.
Great.
Of course you are.
Okay. I was thinking I probably could leave it out, but.
Do what you want.
We'll see. See how clean the break is. So yeah, join us for everything then. As always, follow us on Facebook and Tumblr, sshbpodcast.com. And follow us on your favorite podcasting application. Rate and review if you feel like it. God knows if Google still exists when this goes live. This has been Chris.
This has been Ames.
This has been Caitlin.
This is always Jake.
And Rules of Acquisition 34 and 35, war is good for business. Peace is good for business.
Oh, I was going to say, come to Quarks. Quarks is fun. Come right now. Don't walk, run.
That's better. I'll keep it all in.
Hey.
Yeah, I was busy watching a cat do it. That was a very good jump.
He's very good at jumping.
He's a good jumper.
Barnabas is sometimes the most graceful cat I've ever owned, and he is sometimes the biggest fucking klutz on 4 legs. It's astounding.
That's how cats do. This one ran head first into the edge of that table.
Poor boy.
I was very worried about him because then he goes running off like, wait, I have to check that you're alive.
Poor Phantom.
He just shook it off.
I remember when he was a kitten once, he like was running this our old apartment and he like was running so fast and our rooms were carpeted, but our little entryway was tile.
Hmm.
And he ran,
slid
on the tile, and drifted into a wall.
Oh, yeah. No.
Poor little fellow. And he was made of rubber. He was still a baby.